It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. A somewhat personal question, if I might. Are you spending a lot of money right now? I'll explain. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Wednesday today, the 27th day of May. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We begin with a reading. Our text is the Federal Reserve's 8 times a year survey of the American economy, broken down along regional lines, one region for each of its district banks. It's colloquially known as the Beige Book for the color of its hard copy cover before, of course, we all started reading it online. Anyway, today is Beige Book Day. And as you might imagine, the readings we have chosen for you are grim. Here is the very first line. Economic activity declined in all districts, falling sharply in most. Also, consumer spending fell further. And the outlook remained highly uncertain, and most contacts were pessimistic about the potential pace of recovery. But there was also this. Securing PPP loans helped many businesses limit or avoid layoffs, which makes our lead story today all the more relevant. The House is set to vote this week on a bill that would relax or adjust a whole lot of the, well, complicated rules of the Paycheck Protection Program, the aforementioned PPP. Marketplace's Justin Ho, he has been on this story from the beginning, checked in with some small business owners to see what they are thinking.
If businesses want their PPP loans forgiven, they have to spend the money in 8 weeks. Tiffany Turner, the co-founder of Adrift Hospitality, which runs 5 hotels in Washington State, says there's a problem with that.
The recovery is going to take a lot longer than 8 weeks. In fact, you know, most of us are still going to be in the crisis when that 8 weeks is up.
Turner says she's worried she'll have to lay people off after 8 weeks, given how hard the pandemic has hit her industry. The House bill would give businesses 16 additional weeks to spend their PPP money. Turner says that would go a long way toward getting her loan forgiven, something she was counting on when she took it.
There's so much uncertainty about the next 12 to 18 months that taking on any additional debt is just bad business at this point.
The proposal would also do away with the requirement that businesses spend 75% of their PPP loans on payroll. That would free up money for inventory, rent, and other loan payments. Vermont restaurant owner Mark Fryer says he needs more flexibility, especially if he gets more time to spend the loan money.
As you extend out the time, we're going to continue to have those fixed costs of rent and utilities.
If a loan isn't forgiven, the House bill would extend the amount of time businesses have to pay it off, from 2 years to 5. Fryer says that would help bring down his monthly payments, but they'd still be pretty steep.
Mine would drop from $25,000 to $10,000 a month, but that still represents basically my profitability for years.
If businesses want their loans fully forgiven, they still have to bring back their employee headcounts. Matt Hetrick runs the accounting firm Harmony Group. He says overall, the extensions would give businesses more time to figure out how to do that.
You'll be able to plan, and if you're not going to get your full forgiveness, you can plan for that.
Hetrick says these changes would help reduce the confusion that surrounded the program from day one, and would help companies accomplish the goal of the PPP loans, keeping employees working. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Okay, we are going to get a little weedy here, a little wonky, as one is obliged to do from time to time, so apologies in advance. We ended yesterday with a vocabulary quiz, noting that we will get a key measurement of inflation in this economy, how much prices are going up, at the end of the week. We had asked you the difference between deflation, falling prices over time. Yes, I'm giving you the answers. And disinflation, which is a slowdown in the rate of inflation. Actually falling prices versus prices going up more slowly. Anyway, we did that to get to this today. One of the things that can contribute to inflation, a quick primer here now on something called the velocity of money.
The turnover of money, how much money gets spent from person to businesses and businesses to businesses.
That's Kathy Buss Jancic. She's chief U.S. financial economist at Oxford Economics, talking literally about the speed of money in this economy over time. So let's talk about these times, shall we? Consumer demand is low, which means consumer spending is down, which means the velocity of money is down. So if it's down, where's that money going?
We've seen an increase in precautionary savings. So the savings rate has gone from, you know, roughly a little bit below 8% to about 13% in just the last few months.
The savings rate in this country right now, the highest it's been since 1975. Of course, it is easy to save when so many businesses are closed.
But they're also worried, probably, of what the future holds. So for now, they're greatly increasing, you know, the savings rate.
Although things will pick up slowly, to be sure.
After we've all been locked up, just going down to the local store seems like a big outing, right? Or going to our local restaurant. There's a big leap from that to, say, booking your holiday to Hawaii.
And so the moral of the story is that money is going to be moving pretty slowly in this economy for a while.
That takes a whole nother level of confidence that, you know, we just don't think is there and it won't be there for some period of time.
Our thanks to Kathy Buss Jancic. She is at Oxford Economics for walking us through that one. Today's random walk on Wall Street was to the buy side. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Not far behind those PPP loans that Justin was talking about in the realm of keeping people spending in an economy where so much has been disrupted, those have been the unemployment benefits that were part of the CARES Act. Catch is, there is some unclarity about who is eligible and how much they are eligible for in those unemployment benefits. Uber and Lyft drivers have sued the state of New York for failure to pay benefits in a timely manner. From the Workplace Culture Desk, Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino explains it all goes back to that long-running debate over whether those workers are employees or independent contractors.
Concern about COVID-19 led Do Sedu Otara to stop driving for Uber and Lyft in mid-March. He's got three kids, including a newborn. At the beginning of April, he applied for unemployment. And almost 2 months later, nothing. No check.
So instead of like paying rent, paying my car insurance, I stopped paying for bills and, just focus on saving that money for groceries.
Otara is one of the plaintiffs in the New York case, but delayed unemployment isn't limited to that state.
We're going through the exact situation here.
Nicole Moore was a part-time Lyft driver in Los Angeles who's now working with the group Rideshare Drivers United to help drivers who have to run the gauntlet of California unemployment.
Rideshare drivers are waiting 2 and sometimes 3 months and they still aren't getting the right answers.
The confusion stems from the fact that there are now two different types of unemployment benefits, state unemployment for W-2 employees and what's called pandemic unemployment assistance, a new temporary federal program for people like independent contractors who don't usually qualify for the regular kind.
The problem is that there are a lot of workers whose status as W-2 employees or independent contractors is contested.
Brian Chen is with the National Employment Law Project. He says court cases in New York and a law in California would force gig platforms like Uber and Lyft to classify their drivers as regular employees. So Do Otara in New York and many drivers in California applied for regular unemployment.
In a lot of these cases, their employer insists that they're a contractor and eligible only for this temporary pandemic unemployment assistance.
Uber and Lyft and several other gig companies are still challenging court decisions and laws that classify drivers as full employees, so they haven't paid into the system. But full-time drivers usually qualify for smaller benefits on the temporary pandemic unemployment. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
The global economy is, of course, global, so we are checking in with people globally for our series.
What's up?
What's up?
What's up, world?
What's up, world? For today's installment, we are calling Marrakesh, Morocco, where things have been locked down since March the 20th. Yusuf, hello. How are you? This is Kai Rizdal in Los Angeles. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
You're welcome, my friend. It's a pleasure.
Yusuf Babas owns a grocery store in Marrakesh, took it over from his dad about 6 years ago. Lots of tourist traffic, he says, also locals and businesses.
90% of my customers are restaurants, guest houses, and coffee places. And the other 10% is just local customers who live actually in the area, and they come and make their buy-in once a month.
So I asked him what the last 2.5 months have been like.
I mean, the authorities started by shutting down schools, then restaurants, then mosques, then all of a sudden, just came like that, the hotels and guest houses. Our business depends so much on tourism that we had no choice but to shut down too.
Yeah, are you going to be able to make it? I mean, if shut down since March the 20th, right, April, May, it's 9-something weeks. It also includes the end of Ramadan. Are you going to be able to get by, do you think?
Well, what I thought was good for me is, you know, closing down the store in order to cut, you know, charges. And then I have to work things out, you know, and think of other strategies, like delivering people or, you know, changing, you know, the way the store is managed. But the most important thing for me is now is to survive, you know, the crisis.
Yeah. You said you took this store over from your father, right?
Yeah, about 6-7 years ago.
Yeah. So what does your father think about everything that's going on?
Well, actually, because I'm living with my parents, and, well, he's really open about everything, you know. And, I mean, honestly, we've been to, like, similar situations before. My daddy was about, you know, to close the shop. That's when I showed up and helped him out with the things. So I'm kind of familiar with the situation. For, like, these houses now, they're closed. The restaurants, it's difficult, you know, to get back to business. When I compare myself to them, I'm lucky, but I'm pretty confident. I'm pretty confident that we're gonna make.
Well, good. I hope you do. Yusuf Babas, he's a grocer in Marrakesh, Morocco. Yusuf, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, my friend. You're welcome. Bye.
Coming up.
So this is actually a disinfectant mat here.
A safety precaution hidden in plain sight. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial's up 553 points today, 2.2%, closed at 25,548. The NASDAQ up 72, that is 0.7%, 94.12. The S&P 500 gained 44 points, 1.4%, closed at 3,036. Some tech stocks were down today. Facebook dimmed about 1.3%. Alphabet, owner of Google, of course, edged down less than 0.1%. Microsoft, though, up about 0.1%. Some stay-at-home stocks weakened with the prospect of businesses and people getting back to work. Zoom down 1.2%. Today, Amazon down 0.4%. Netflix, though, grew 1.2% today. Bonds fell just a touch. The yield on the 10-year T-note, pretty much steady, 0.69%. You're listening to Marketplace.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Now, here is something we haven't said on this radio program in quite a while. There's going to be an initial public offering coming up. Warner Music Group says it's going public. The timing is obviously a little bit unusual. This pandemic has hit the music industry real hard, and you have seen the stock market bouncing up and down and up mostly lately, right? Marketplace Jasmine Garz reports now on Warner Music's decision and the logic behind it.
About 10 years ago, the recording industry seemed to be on its deathbed. Album sales were tanking and online piracy was rampant. These days, labels are singing a different tune. Yesterday, an initial public offering valued Warner Music at up to $13.3 billion, four times what it sold for in 2011. What changed? Professor George Howard from Berklee School of Music says streaming.
People are paying a monthly fee, whereas prior to streaming, it was much harder to predict because, you know, people would pay ad hoc, right? It would be, I'll go to a record store or I'll pay for a download. Now there's regularity.
Recording artists have long complained they make mere pennies per song from services like Spotify or Apple. But for the recording industry, it's meant double-digit growth every year for the last 4 years. Warner, which has artists like Lizzo on its roster, saw an annual streaming growth of over 20% last year. Still, the pandemic has hit the music industry hard. COVID-19 has shut down live music, and streaming has dropped because we aren't commuting. So why IPO now? Peter Volley, an analyst with eMarketer, says it's all about the long term.
We think as people get back to their normal routines, people go back to work, then people will start listening to more audio content, listening to more radio again.
And going to concerts. He can't say exactly when, but at some point, the music will start again. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
Everything, of course, is changing in this economy. We're going to talk fashion right now. Gucci has announced it's going to stop showing new designs at all of the various fashion weeks that were so important in the before times. And the clothing retail market writ large has been nothing less than abysmal. Marketplace's Erica Barris has the update.
When Gucci announced it was slashing the number of fashion shows it'll hold, it wasn't surprising to people who watch the sector. Jenny Vry Liu is with the Yale Center for Customer Insights.
This shift really hasn't begun with COVID. It was perhaps accelerated by it.
That's because, according to Jeff Gallick, a marketing professor at Carnegie Mellon,
having to come out with new fashions every single season in hope that those fashions will sell is a problem for businesses. They're overproducing.
Fashion had already been under pressure to change, says Tamai Sardari, who teaches luxury business marketing at NYU. It's become more inclusive and to reduce its carbon footprint. And the fashion calendar year, planned far in advance, feels outdated in the age of fast fashion a la H&M and Zara.
A lot of the influence comes from online channels. People were eager to see what new things were coming out from brands that were going direct to consumer and that had already bypassed the traditional channels of marketing.
Like fashion shows. Then there's the shuttering of retailers. Sucharita Kadali, an analyst with Forrester, says that means Gucci and other brands have to figure out how to make up the sales they would have made through those stores.
Brands now have to sell their own merchandise, putting pressure on them to try to be more efficient.
And with many brick-and-mortar stores closed, that's going to take some creativity. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
Bars and restaurants are either closed or at limited capacity right now in most places, which has changed the beer product flow, if I could coin a phrase here. We are not buying beer at bars, but alcohol sold at grocery stores and big boxes was up almost 25% in April. Yes, part of that's beer, part of that's other stuff. Anyway, for small craft brewers, that has meant a rethink of business models. From Austin, Texas, home to a lively craft beer scene, by the way, Marketplace's Andy Euler drew the tough assignment.
Before the pandemic shut its indoor-outdoor taproom, St. Elmo Brewing Company in South Austin sold patrons beers with names like Carl and Norm. Co-founder Timothy Bullock took a break from installing fans and outdoor shades for a quick chat.
We're looking at a split of probably between 78 and 85% of our sales coming from in-person traffic. So when social distancing is in place, that 80% just kind of vanishes.
Retail beer sales are up, but that doesn't help St. Elmo. It doesn't sell in grocery stores. But it is trying a few things, like selling a few cans and jugs out of its tap room.
It's a middle school dance, like where everybody's just out on the dance floor and not knowing exactly what to do.
St. Elmo also worked with another local craft brewery, Austin Beer Works, on a limited edition hazy IPA just for the quarantine. St. Elmo's version was called Air 5, you know, like a high five but without slapping hands, and Beer Works was called No Touching. Michael Graham is one of the owners at Austin Beer Works. 40% of that brewery's sales come from bars and restaurants, and you can find Beer Works beer at grocery stores all over Austin.
More people are buying beer in the grocery stores and convenience stores, but not nearly enough to make up for the lost volume from bars and restaurants.
He says Beer Works has talked about lowering the price of its beer to move more volume. But Bart Watson, chief economist at the Brewers Association, says playing the price game can be treacherous.
You might attract new customers, but those are customers who are buying you not just because of the strength of your brand or the beers, but also because of the price. And so what happens if somebody else comes in at a lower price?
He says the value market is most likely not the consumer base craft brewers are trying to attract. And most small breweries can't compete with AB InBev or Miller Coors on price. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Every day, there's another college or university in this country announcing it's going to open up for the fall semester. Open up as in actual people on the actual campus, which is no small logistical and public health challenge. One place those schools might look to for ideas is China, where students have already started to return to class in person, obviously at some schools. New York University's Shanghai campus is one of those schools. Summer session there started on Monday. And Marketplace's Jennifer Peck got a firsthand look at post-lockdown college life.
Hi. Hi. Ni hao. My name is Tao Si, and this is a minority and folk dance class.
The class starts with the warm-up. It's the first time Professor Tao is seeing students in person since the pandemic hit.
So exciting when I see them. I almost tear. Like, ugh.
But to reopen this campus requires a lot of safety precautions, starting at the entrance. Only one set of doors in, another set out.
Because we don't want people colliding. It's all about social distancing.
That's Jeff Lehman, the vice chancellor of NYU Shanghai.
So this is actually a disinfectant mat here that you're walking on. This is supposed to take any germs off your feet. This gentleman here will look at your QR code.
The QR code he's talking about is like our health passport from the Shanghai government. We both have green-colored ones, means we're okay. We pass a fever check, then an automatic dispenser drops a glob of hand sanitizer on my palms. We disinfect our hands again in the elevator and again at the cafe.
I wish I'd bought stock in a hand sanitizer company because our school is really all in on hand sanitizer, absolutely everywhere.
Plenty of cleaning gels, but not many chairs. Most tables have just one, and they face the same direction to encourage social distancing. Student Amy DeSillis from North Carolina, a senior, says she's happy to be back on campus.
In one of my classes, I saw him walking down the hall. I'm like, oh my God, hi, it's so good to see you. Like, you've been here? Oh my gosh, like, let's get
lunch. Probably we're not that friendly to begin with.
Exactly. I'm like, you know, you were not someone that was on my radar before, but now you're going to be my best friend.
A lot of her friends are stuck overseas. Same for two-thirds of NYU's teaching staff. China has shut its borders to outsiders because of the pandemic.
Hey, beautiful, Patricia. 3, 2, 1, 很好.
So teachers like Professor Tao, who have returned to Shanghai, end up with classes where 4 students are in the dance studio and 3 more joined by video conferencing using Zoom. NYU calls this mixed-mode teaching, and it doesn't always go smoothly. During a dance routine, some of the home students are out of step with the rest of the class. Bad internet connection, says Professor Tao. NYU says so far it's spent heavily on things like extra internet bandwidth and broadcasting equipment. All things technical, even down to where to place a microphone, are handled by Library Director Zhu Xiaojing.
You can only have one mic because you have two mics. They interfere with each other. So how do you use the one microphone to capture both faculty and the student in the classroom?
The goal is to make courses just as lively for those joining online as for those sitting in the classroom. Because mixed-mode learning might be the new normal. Even if every student in this dance class were to come back to Shanghai, under the school's social distancing rules, some would still have to join online. That is, until a vaccine is found. In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, in which SpaceX CEO Elon Musk gets to have his cake and almost shoot a rocket into space, too. You probably heard by now that the SpaceX launch today was scrubbed, bad weather. They're going to try again on Saturday. But I was watching the live stream of the two astronauts getting out to the launch pad earlier today. Their ride, conveniently for Musk's other company, a Tesla Model X. Here is your moment of economic context as we part ways for the day. The San Francisco Fed does an index of news sentiment, how the news is reflecting what's happening in the economy. And here's a quote from the report out today. We began with the Fed, we'll end with the Fed, I guess. News sentiment, the Fed says, appears to be in the first half of a U pattern despite a V-shaped stock market pattern. This suggests, the report goes on, that renewed optimism in the financial markets is not translating into a more positive tone in the economic news media. End of quote. And that is, I think, what we've been saying this whole time. Our media production team, which is, once again, the people, which are, I suppose, the people who are going into work so that the rest of us don't have to. Robin Edgar, Drew Jostat, Jeff Peters, Daniel Ramirez, Jay Siebold, Charlton Thorpe, Ben Talladay, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.